mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And we love all of you, and we appreciate all the help that we have recently just got from our fun drive. It makes such a difference. So Felicia and Jake are in the studio here for Kauai Soapbox, and we have a downpour of issues today, and it's going to be a number of issues that affect all across the islands, and definitely a bit about the people versus the powerful, because I went to a symposium last week that I would say was about the powerful versus the people. So we're going to be looking at that and talking about a number of issues, but I'm going to start the whole show off on a really happy note, because I am so stoked that I have my dear friend who has grown up on me in the studio with me, Madison. Hey, Madison.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're going to first listen to our underwriters who keep the show on the air, and then I'm going to talk story with you for just a couple minutes, or a few minutes, and I'm proud of you for all the music that you've done, and so I want to put a couple songs on.
Aww,
you're down
you.
With that?
Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, homegrown place. You guys should go see Kauai Store even and put your music in there, because Kauai Store is a store that just sells stuff that's homegrown, and you are homegrown even if you have now grown up. Hey, and I see my phone's buzzing with Tulsi Gabbard's name. She's not actually coming on the show today here, but she has said that she wants to be a regular. We're going to be hearing for her once a month, but I think right now she's having her phone town hall meeting. I want to give her, our representative, a little bit of a shout out. I really like it when our elected officials reach out to our people, because a lot of times you just got to go chasing them like crazy. Madison, do you go by Maddie now or Madison?
Madison.
Madison, okay. Because, so you have put out how many songs now? We used to say how many CDs or how many records, but now it seems like they come out in...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually been doing singles, really. So I actually put out an EP a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. An extended play,
Mm-hmm, yeah. I put that out a couple months ago on Spotify and with iTunes.
iTunes, mm-hmm. And I know that you've had several, right? Two mm-hmm. other albums, right?
Two other albums, yeah. When I was younger, I think I had an album at 13, and then I had another one at 15.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been honored to be basically debuting them here on Kauai Community Radio. And
yeah.
You've been kind of roaming the world a little bit and been in L.A. You kind of, I don't want to call you a child prodigy, but something close to that. You know, you have...
Something close to that, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's too much to live up to, so I don't want to lay that on you. But you kind of went away and started your music career.
I did, yeah. I went over to the mainland, went to L.A. for a little bit. That was fun. It was crazy, fast-paced there. It was a big change from Kauai. That's where I made that EP.
Yes.
I'm now in Arizona.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I've been self-producing my own album.
Are you in Prescott?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's another hometown thing for me, because I went to Prescott High and everything.
Yeah.
Yep. Kind of from there, too. And you're... I think it would be your great-grandfather was the math teacher there, Mr. Bigelow?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's your grandmother happens to be in the studio. She's being quiet, but it is her dad who was the math teacher when I was in high school there. So kind of lots of connections and good music there. And for the listeners, for later on in the show, in maybe 10 minutes or so, we are going to be talking about how people stay powerful, how they hold on to their rights when we're in this onslaught of change that keeps coming at us, kind of like I'm thinking of the old game Tetris, but maybe people at your generation don't know Tetris, but things just keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. Mm-hmm. And I'm really pleased with your music, and I noticed that some of them, actually, some of these songs have to do with what's going on in the mm-hmm. world. And so, to me, you are a representative of the emerging generation. And, you know, what inspired these songs? I'd had kind of picked out two of them that I wanted to play. Mm-hmm. One of which, I'm pulling it up here. I have it loaded. Is called Changing Colors. And can you tell us what's that about and what, you know, inspired you to write that?
Yeah, so basically this whole new album that I've been creating is from not only my perspective of everything that's going on, but just people in general. The album has an overall theme called Questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title track of the album. Basically, I'm asking more questions than giving the answers.
And if I remember right, you're 19?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right on. And so, as you've been traveling around, you must see a lot of changes, even in from one area, from Kauai to California to
Definitely.
Arizona.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And then we have, I noticed that California's on fire again, darn
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when I think of Prescott, like the big wave riders there were the smoke jumpers and the, I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of the hot shots, mm-hmm. the big fire mm-hmm. thing. So I know Arizona had some fires this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was listening to the song Changing Colors,
mm-hmm.
it actually, somehow in my mind, I was thinking a little bit about the fall colors and then just the changes that go on
mm-hmm.
and even like the fires and what that creates and mm-hmm. making change. What very specifically, is there a specific thing that inspired this piece or just kind of
just the overall everything that's going on, you know?
Okay.
Today, but
all right, well, let's play this. So, Changing Colors by Madison.
Sitting on the corner, Friday night to eat, to the grocery store, and then and now. Should have gone north or south, it's a question of the hour. Question of the hour. Shouldn't you have been on the door? It seems so very long. Know that I had already started out to get to where I find a place in space and time. We'll figure out what it's really all about. We'll figure out what it's really all about. Changing colors, watching signs, dark. Careful stops and moves. Flashing yellows, red and greens, pink with the flow. Just pink with the flow. This busy intersection, seen from my perception. With the hurt, though I wish I could fly up with the birds. Though I wish I could fly up with the birds. Changing colors, watching sights, dark, careful stars and birds. Flashing yellows, red and green, moving with the flow. Just moving with the flow. Looking down from the clouds with freedom from above, but my problems with good and mighty small.
Well, that was beautiful. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then so there is another one. I mean, there's a, all three songs are really great, and I just want to, I'm going to feature two of them. This other one is called Not So Long Ago, mm-hmm. and do you want to tell us what that one's about?
Yeah, Not So Long Ago is basically, I mean, you can listen to the lyrics in it, but it's about how things are so different now. From not so long ago, you know, from having TVs and cars or having Netflix or cell phones.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in, you were born in 1996, is that right?
Yeah, 98. Yeah.
98. And so the internet really kind of came out in 1995. So people in your generation are the ones who have really always had that. Mm-hmm. And that has been such a profound change and transformative, where we are self-empowered in so many ways of educating ourselves and then expressing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So are you on a label, or did you self-produce your...
This is all self-produced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just want to give you a shout-out, too, as a self-directed learner. You know,
thank
you. You really you came into my awareness when I was involved with self-education, homeschooling, mm-hmm. and becoming a performing artist was transformative for you.
Mm-hmm.
And another little shout out to the Songwriters Festival, right? Because mm-hmm. you went to that at 11 or 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so so let's hear Not So Long Ago. See if I have that coming up right.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how far away it seemed? I'd start out and gone. Can you imagine the difference? Jump down in the fight and their fights.
Madison, thank you so much. I'm so proud of you. Mm-hmm. And for the listeners who don't know, I, you know, have little girl attachment to you because you are definitely part of the whole musical team with my son and Eli. You know, he's mm-hmm. in Liverpool now.
I saw that. That's crazy.
And he just had he has a new EP out too.
I listened to it. It was amazing.
He's on Spotify.
Very, very talented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so shout out to Tapu and Noah as well. Mm-hmm. And Violet's doing great. All these guys mm-hmm. are doing amazing things. She's going to New York University.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So Eli's on Spotify. OCDC's on Spotify. How do people find Madison?
Spotify. I am on Spotify also, and also on iTunes. These songs are going to be on there this week.
So, just like the other ones, we get you first. Yay! Mm-hmm.
And I have to throw in there, it's Madison Rowe, R-O-E. And Instagram is Madison Rowe Official, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Madison Rowe Official. And then, so madisonrowe.com.
Mm-hmm. That's
you can find everything under that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and are you going to tour or what? You know, you've done so many things. Or what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal for this next year is to tour.
And so you're here seeing family, but then you're going to go on tour after you've got this music out there.
Yes.
Okay, so madisonrowe.com and Madison Rowe
Official,
official on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're also on Facebook.
Let me interject one other thing that you might find interesting.
This is Tawny.
She was known as Madison. Just Madison, right, when mm-hmm. she was younger. And so her first two albums are still selling worldwide and playing worldwide under the name of Madison, just Madison.
Okay.
So it's now separated because with this new album and Madison's gotten older and her sound has evolved, all of her new stuff is under Madison Rowe. So you can hear her music either under Madison if you want her first two albums or Madison Rowe if you want to hear
okay, and Grand Manager extraordinaire, Tawny Riley, who's built careers for many people, too. So you are lucky, and mm-hmm. I'm happy to see you, and maybe I can see you after the show.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you again.
Thank you, Madison Rowe, for coming in. All right, we love you. I believe I have a caller now. Aloha, you are on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Thank you.
Hi, is this Carol Cox? Hey, Carol.
Yes.
Thank you so much for calling in. I was just about to start talking about the symposium that we went to last Friday and Saturday on Oahu. I imagine that's mm-hmm. why you're calling? Is that correct? That's why you're calling?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, if I can start by just saying one of my takeaways, and then I would love to bounce a little bit of this off, you know. I have a bunch of notes here, and I have some sound bites that I was going to share out with the audience. But this was called Public Participation in a Polarized Era, and I feel like it was manipulating the polarization of the public process. Some ways it felt like going to the belly of the beast. I mean, how did you read it? Are you there? Carol? I'm not hearing him right now. He's still connected? Okay, well, I'm going to talk till he comes back on. I might text him and tell him he's a little bit off here. But what I saw was that there was, you know, an opinion bias so strong that the government or the government or the developer's project was so right. You know, it felt pretty uncomfortable for me. I actually had a backache when I was...
We got disconnected, obviously.
Okay, all right. So oops. Okay.
And there he is.
Okay, can you get rid of the other line that's bouncing? Okay, Carol, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. So I was just sharing with the listener that I felt like the opinion bias was so strong in that meeting that I actually was, really uncomfortable with what I was hearing. It felt to me like almost a trade show for consultants talking to the government and the developers of how they could come in and insulate the project from the will of the people or the reaction of the public. What was your reaction to what we saw?
Well, first of all, I felt myself complimenting the narrator or the moderator for putting on such a good show. I didn't really go into details as to why I was thanking him, but to share with the public and the listeners, the reason I was thanking him is that this is a rare occasion to see the inner workings of government and how it lends itself, and big business, how it lends itself of stripping and robbing the people of the rights that they have, transparency, to be informed in a timely fashion, to make informed opinions. And all of that is being thrown out the window, so to speak, pushed aside, and with this new style of managing the herd, so to speak, as I would describe it.
Managing the herd, I would say that is pretty accurate. Carol Cox, are there any particular ones that stand out for you? I do have a few pieces that I have recorded that I am going to play, like on transparency,
right,
and privacy, so, but I want to hear what your opinion is.
Some of the most obvious things were that triggered my thoughts that say that this is bad for the people, but good for the consultants, good for the moderator, good for the facilitators, and good for those that want to take a project that may rob the public of certain benefits, or install a program or project that really isn't suitable for the area that they're proposing it. So my take was that, first of all, the cost, it was $185 to participate.
If you were from Oahu, like when we...
Oahu. Now, if you wanted to participate from a public standpoint, a public member, you'd have to get on a plane from another island, possibly be here, rent a car, get down here. So the cost, and this was supposed to be about informing the public and enhancing the public and identifying the problems with the polarization of the public. Well, it missed its mark, but it was successful on behalf of the developers. Secondly, the people that put it on, I'm only reminded that Ulupono was a sponsor of this project. But Ulupono, I'm reminded that they were the ones who were attempting to Hawaii Dairy Farms to install or build a dairy.
On Kauai, in the Mahalapu area, yes.
Yes, on Kauai. And so they were sponsoring this. And then I'm also reminded that in that process, I felt that this was a forum for them to plead their case and present false information as they did in the presentation, and I don't think it was appropriate, but that's just my thought, to they were blaming the courts and the public, basically, when in fact the courts ruled, the court heard the decision, heard the weighed the evidence, and they lost. So to have them to participate in the capacity that they did suggests to me that this was nothing to do with public awareness, transparency, or anything. It was just a way of depriving the public of their right to know and participation.
Well, I very much thought that. I mean, when I sat there, like I said, I was physically aching because it's hard to listen to something presented that way. If I can give a couple of examples here, like at the 10:45 time when we were learning from case studies, the case studies that I recall, Greg Chun was talking about the Mauna Kea element and envisioned Mauna Kea. And we had Amy Hennessy from Hawaii Dairy Farm, which is the project in Mahalapu. We had Kaleaina Lee about Aha, or the Na'ainopuni process, basically talking about having a country within a country for the Hawaiian community. Melissa White, she did something on Complete Streets. That seemed less contentious, but we had Ken Lowry talking about Kaka'ako. And what I heard in each one of these presentations, never once was there a suggestion of what truly was the adversity to it. You know, like with the Kaka'ako piece, it wasn't stated that it is replacing an area where there is this profound level of homelessness, some of which is Kamehameha Schools land and DHHL land and a public park, and that what is being put up there are, I think they did say expensive high-rise somewhat, but they emphasized, oh, we're putting in some public housing without saying, yeah, with a separate entrance and just such a tiny minimalization. They didn't point out where there was basically, it felt pretty condescending. And in the AHA discussion, never mentioned this was at a private gated place, that there was police out there burying, you know, having a barrier to many of the Kanaka Mo'oli, like crowds of Kanaka Mo'oli trying to come in and sustaining on the outside for days. And with Amy Hennessy speaking about Hawaii Dairy Farms, she chose not to say that this is right on top of the wellheads, that they basically lost two court decisions, that they had to pay a $500,000 lawyer fee for violations of the Clean Water Act. You know, I asked her to come up with that, but that was after the fact, and then really, in all honesty, I didn't feel she was honest in stating why. I have all this stuff recorded. You know, I have it where I can play it in a little bit. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Jake. And on the phone with me is Carol Cox. And you have a show, and you have had a Think Tech program. What is the name of your show, Carol, on Oahu?
The Carol Cox Show on KWAI, 1080 AM.
Yes.
On Sundays at 9 to 11, and at carolcox.com, where we podcast and stream it.
Yes, and your shows, to me, typically have a lot of investigative reporting. The other person who spoke, just so the listener has a sense of what we were watching, Greg Chun, who did the Envision Kauai, he is a clinical psychologist. And I felt that he was using his skill set telling people how to manipulate the process. He didn't use the word manipulate, but he was saying change the framing of the question. Don't ask, are you supportive of the 30-meter telescope or are you not? Ask, what is your relationship to the Mauna? Where do you envision the Mauna in 100 years? Like, how he, as a consultant, comes in there with Envision Mauna Kea, skirts around the main issue, and I felt that, you know, as it gave skill sets, it was how to dilute the challenge. Did you hear that kind of as well?
I heard that, and was bothered more so with other things that he said, and that he had recruited or incorporated the help of another group. I can't recall the name of the group, but one thing that bothered me immensely was that he said that they have meetings, but these meetings are not public. So
yes.
In other words, you might be dealing with a public matter, but you can convene and introduce a private entity to that and don't have to disclose or allow the general public to participate. That bothered me.
Well, and when you bring that up, what I heard is he said, and who they're speaking to is largely government agencies or developers who want to get a project across. So they're saying, they're giving strategies on how to achieve the requirement for the public process. So one of what was created there was, to have these, convene these separate groups where they're smaller, where they're not in the public eye, and that they, you get them together, you frame the question, you shift how it is being addressed, but they said, break up the groups. And we heard that even from the AHA, too, is how you separate people who have alignment in their visioning, and you separate them out. And in Greg Chun's piece, he was saying, make sure you don't just have the Kanaka Mo'oli cultural practitioners, that you include the hunters, that you include the tour groups, that you include a much broader amount of users, so that when you are looking at your statistics, and we were learning about statistics, that it's 10% rather than this whole crowd that feels this way, right? So then on each group that comes up, the majority of the people are all right with what's happening, right? So it's a way, mm-hmm. I saw that as intentionally diluting the voice of the people.
Yeah, and that was my take as well, infusing the just going out and picking any groups who have not been vocal, who have not been part of the narrative or anything, and have not expressed any concerns with what was going on. But the groups that had, they were being manipulated and isolated and watered down. And this was a method of diluting the people's positions, or those that are speaking in opposition to it. You dilute it, and then there was the describing of the various strategies to dilute. But what I also didn't care about that meeting was that it never said that the government or the developer has any responsibility. It basically said that if you have a project, no one really determines if it's a project that's needed, the narrators or the moderators or the consultant. They just get hired, and they then force feed, and they want to get it done for the developer or the government. And that's simply wrong.
Yeah, I felt like it was missing a moral compass. You know, there was not self-reflection, never in, I'm trying to count here, there was about 10 different panel discussions. Not a one of them had a representative of the discouraged group, the people who were fighting back. It was all about these consultants saying, this is how we can help you with that problem. And most of the consultants were actually not from Hawaii. They were coming from many other states. And what it seemed like is there was this sense of authority. Hey, we can come in. We have a formula of how to have your five public events. This is how we will count who's come. This is how we can. They didn't use the word dilute, but they were trying to control and contain the conversation. It was definitely looking at, how to stop the public process from stopping the intention of what was there. And I remember a rather accomplished man, Bob Fishman. You're from Oahu. Do you remember what his background is? It seems like he's done everything.
He was worked for the city and the managing director, so as well as Ray Soon, who was there on one of the panels.
Yeah, and so Bob Fishman, who I actually liked, and I spent a little bit of time talking to him afterwards, and I expressed to him what I was discouraged on in this. But when he was in the panel, he said, I cannot think of ever hearing a solution from the public, and I don't expect to hear a solution from the public. I just want to hear what their perspective is. Is that, like, I have it on a taped piece, but I don't have that queued up. Do you remember that comment?
I remember him, and you and I talked about that. I don't know exactly. I wouldn't care to try and quote him per se, but.
Well, that was a pretty heavy comment to make. There was such confidence to the point of arrogance in these people, and I it felt condescending, because I think that They don't dislike the public. They just view the public as incapable of making the right decision for their own communities.
And remember, as the day went on Saturday, sticking to Friday, first of all, here's the composition so your listeners will get a better feel. We had former Congressman, State Representative, Senator Ed Case mm-hmm. on one of the panels. Then we had Mitch Dollier, a member of the panel, which is a developer, Castle Foundation.
Castle Foundation, and he was with one of the airlines too, right? He had run Hawaiian Air.
Now this is not to say that these people are to demonize them
They
have, but when you're talking about the polarization and making things better for the general public, but yet you're employing and describing tactics that you should employ or the developer or the government should employ to dilute or take away the people's voice or dampen it, then that caused me to get a queasy feeling, and that this isn't about public, you know, welfare, public well-being and informing the public. This is about how can we rip and shred the rights of the people. Ray Soon, as an example, gave out four examples where he believes that it'd be okay and justified to keep the public in the dark, so to speak, and not inform them.
I have that piece queued up, and you know, okay. In a little bit I will play that. I also have some of Jana Wolf queued up, where on the piece where it's talking about the difference between transparency and privacy. And for the listeners, Carol Cox, what will come up a little bit later in the show is I'm going to be looking at and announcing many of these events that are in front of us. Like, there's the Board of Land and Natural Water, Resources, coming up this Friday. They're talking about the water diversion for Kauai. And, you know, it's over there on Oahu. It's, again, very expensive to get over there and to participate. We have Princeville having a resort designation happening. That's just putting a new entitlement for more visitors when we have, in this region, more than half the people on the street don't live here. So it is overwhelming. We have also coming up a distillery, a special use permit or a variance being asked for a distillery in a neighborhood and a farm area. And, you know, it's when we have plenty of industrial zoning that isn't being used. We're also going to talk a little bit about the necropsy on our whales that got stranded on the beach, because that was another example of having consultants coming in and helping manage the public outreach. Though that one, I did have them on my show, the government, a couple times really trying to do that. We have a GET tax being offered to the counties, so the state can hold on to this transit accommodation tax. And my guess is you've probably covered the rail project on your show. We haven't gone deep in that because it's more Oahu, but $2 billion got set for the rail, again, in a special session this summer when we have so many homeless people that are living underneath the highways. That seems like the bigger issue. Those are probably all things, or at least the rail. Did you watch the rail issue deeply?
Oh, I did, and was opposed to it because of the way it was handled, the way it was funded, and also watching the reasons why not to vote for some many of these politicians that we see that are so comfortable and irresponsible in their ways in funding this rail. So, of course, I watched it, and I think it's not over yet. I think the cost is going to be mounting.
And I believe other projects that may be funded throughout the state will be impacted in some way, because we don't really know the true picture.
what the real impact economically it will be.
Well, when I look at, you know, when you have $2 billion, I think the total amount on that rail has gone up now to something like $7 billion. And we have, you know, 1.4 million people. So it doesn't take too much wisdom to do the math on that. And that is an incredible investment for a pretty small stretch of road. And when I think about all the housing issue, that's where I personally would have really preferred to see support.
Well, let me say this, and then I don't know how much time you want to take any further, but this meeting on Friday, this conference or forum that we had on Friday and Saturday that we're, that we're talking about, many of those strategies and tactics were employed with the rail.
That's
many
why I'm bringing it up.
Said, even down to the voting for the rail, they weren't asked if they wanted a rail, clearly. And so we see the results or the product of people being led down a path and being hoodwinked by the officials and the consultants and the moderators. There's a, the rail is the perfect example of what will and can happen.
So, Carol Cox, thank you for talking to me about this public participation in a polarized era. This is KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea, Felicia. I'm not letting you go yet. Felicia and Jake with Kauai's Soapbox. Question, do you want to stay on while I play some of this soundtrack from the meeting, or would you like to go and just...
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to
okay.
Hear it again.
So I'm going to play a little bit, just an opening by Jana Wolf as she introduces Greg Chun and Ray Soon, because this is the caliber of speakers that were there. It was, I felt like, had a pretty rock star cast of powerful people coming and speaking. And this piece is on transparency versus privacy in the public process. And there's a little bit of legitimacy to what these people are saying, but I think it is, this isn't private industry. This is public. And so it's a little sinister to me. And I'm going to, this is the first time I'll have played it on the radio, so I'm hoping it comes out loud enough. Like what thing I noticed is the room was not mic'd up well, so it wasn't quite loud enough. This is Jana. No. Okay. Darn it. It's not coming out on the radio well. Okay, shoots, because one of the things that she says is transparency is not necessarily good, and privacy is not necessarily bad. And so I had her piece there. Maybe can you, you know Ray Soon pretty well. Can you tell us who Ray Soon is?
Well, he was a city managing director at one time. He is, we have a project called the Biki Bikes here, a bike share Hawaii. He is one of the incorporators of Biki, a bike share Hawaii. As he was a city employee, he incorporated that to facilitate. Much of that bike material is unavailable to the public, and it was at his doing. So Mr. Soon has been in and out of government, and serves on a number of boards in the past.
And
I think currently,
currently
the Board of Water Supply.
And he works under Kurt Caldwell. And he
yes.
also, I think he said 15 years with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. So
right.
he had a lot of space on that. And he had four reasons why he felt that transparency was somewhat problematic. You know, some of it, he had some validity. He's saying, you know, when you throw out a half-baked idea, you know, it's still important to throw that out there so people can sit there and work with it. But I think the genesis of how ideas come is very important. We hear the statement, you don't want to know how that pork sausage is made when we end up with these rules. But I think what happens when we get these rules is that there are agendas that aren't on the surface. There are agendas that serve the moneyed, and it is very difficult for the people to even be aware of that agenda. And we saw this whole workshop teaching how to mask the agenda to something that is going to sound good for the public.
Well, what we saw here, in there's a Uniform Information Practices Act, 91F, of the State Code of Public Information, or the Sunshine Law. That's a law with specific conditions. You're supposed to tailor your behavior as city and government officials to that. We live this over and over. So there are rules, and we're a nation of rules and laws. So here, we don't need an individual to come up and tell us, engage us, what is transparent is good, or, closed doors is also good, or privacy is good. No, we don't need that. We don't need anyone defining that, redefining it, because the rules are already clear. We've had experiences where the public is defrauded through sequestering themselves behind closed doors and only giving the public an insight when the product is done. So what I saw there was, this was a boasting, basically, to openly say that we do go behind closed doors sometimes without informing the public, because the product that we come out with is better and it's not interfered with or stalled. But the public's right to transparency shouldn't be a reason to withhold information or failure to disclose this information or the progress of a project.
I would agree with that. And then when they do that, right along with having that list of five controversial, I don't think the Complete Streets was controversial, but most of the rest were very controversial, and they allowed these people to stand up there and give false narratives. And
yes.
And so when they did not even show the complexity of it, I felt it was deeply disturbing. And Peter Adler, who put the event together, it was Accord 3, Ulupono, Think Tech, Civil Beat, but at the very beginning of the meeting, Peter Adler said, the people who are meant to come, are the who are meant to be in the conversation, are those who bother to come. And if it hadn't been for some Akamai Facebook friends sending me this agenda for this event, I wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have known. You and I aren't exactly members of the public. We were there kind of as members of the public, but we are also somewhat members of the press. There was no other press there other than the Think Tech, who seemed to be completely in alignment with what was being put out. So I felt like, for me, watching it, it was a blatant admission of guilt of what I have suspected for some time, is that consultants are hired so that they are a layer between, you know, the government and what is required, and, you know, it deflects the accountability that needs to be in there.
Yeah, I felt that in the completion of that program, and we'll describe it as a program, because It had little or nothing to do with informing and advising the public, number one. And secondly, what it did was did give the public, those that participated in there, like myself and a few and others, it did afford us an opportunity to see what the inner workings, so it made our suspicions,
they validated them,
and confirmed them, so to speak. We know that there's behind the scenes ex parte communications, and that a project is introduced behind the doors, and then there's this effort to a commitment to get it done. And getting it done is hiring narrators and facilitators and consultants to solely get it done and try to avoid any unrest from the public. But if it is, we can manipulate that and subdue it by employing these strategies. And that's basically what it was. Ulupono sponsored it. Civil Beat is a spinoff from Ulupono. So you're basically looking at the one and the same. You and I have radio shows, and I have a TV show, and we weren't invited. So there was no effort to really solicit the public, as far as I'm concerned. And the other media were not there. That says a lot.
Yeah, it says a lot. And it basically, the discussion is public consultation strategies and skills and taking stock and devising solutions. So, you know, they were pretty overt about the goal. And I don't think that the goal was to have us share this. And So I'm sharing it. And I'll have to sit there and look at my recordings and see if I can't clean it up for
Don't fret. I will send you, Dropbox you, some better recordings possibly that I did have. As you know, I recorded as well.
Yeah.
And you're more than welcome to play. I'm sure your listeners would benefit from this. And, you know, often we as hosts get accused of overplaying, you know, amplifying something that really isn't making a mountain of a molehill. But the reality is this is dangerous precedence. This is dangerous behavior. This is already, we should be enhancing public access.
And instead, we should be respecting it. We should be reflecting on why the people are opposed to this and what is their reason.
Right. We shouldn't have people sitting and describing how you can orchestrate people and interfere with their access and the flow of information about government function. You know, we should be going the other way, giving more, making more available. But instead, this process suggests that is not to be expected.
Right.
And we shouldn't expect it. So that's why my advice to everyone that's out there that care about anything, to speak up and say to their representative, we don't want to see our rights whittled away or reduced. We want them strengthened.
Yes, and this, as we've seen this week with the national agenda, you know, really greatly doing tax reform with virtually zero review and removing key necessary components of the medical plan. I mean, this all, it's top to bottom where we have these challenges. And so this was an insight to what's happening here on the island. And I'm sure for the listener, as some of the stuff comes up over the next few weeks, I'll be pulling sound bites that can work where it directly reflects projects and strategies that have been done and where we can just start calling a spade. You know, there they're using this strategy. There they're using this strategy because they had names for a lot of the strategies.
Yes.
They had names for them. I mean, they were shameless on it, you know. So okay. Well, thank you, Carol Cox, for calling in. I appreciate it. And people can find you at carolcox.com for podcasts.
Yes, ma'am.
And Sunday you most probably talked about this topic.
I will be talking about it, and they can hear it live stream at KWAI1080AM.com at 9 o'clock. CarolCox.com, and you can catch in and hear it live stream.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling.
Aloha. Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye.
Bye. So, Jake.
How are you doing?
Good. So, thank you for coming in, and I know you just had a heavy motorcycle day, so thank you for coming in, even with sore muscles. We might have another caller. We'll take that call. We're going to be at the top of the hour, and I've got some new guests in the show. That is an example of citizen and neighborhood activism at helping to be part of what they're trying to manifest in their community. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, KKCR.
Hey, Felicia, it's Camera.
Hi, Camera.
Hi, I tuned in a little late. I don't think I was totally late. I'm really glad you covered the conference in Oahu that was put on by the, I guess, state and offshoots of the Pierre Omidyar Empire. But I was wondering, did you talk at all about the dairy presentation there?
I brought it up. I didn't go deep into it. I did say, I'm trying not to be petty with them. Most people here do understand that the dairy is on top of the wells. 750 feet away, an 80-acre effluent pond right next to that. They didn't mention that, a key piece. They didn't mention the contamination of the existing stream that has actually nothing to do with the dairy, except for possibly how they have disrupted the ditch system. But there is a chronic contamination at, probably a thousandfold over what is considered the safe level there. We talked about them not mentioning the lawsuits that they, and having all their permits pulled and being asked by the federal government to put out $500,000 back to the plaintiffs. And by the way, the people who are working on it, Friends of Mahalapu, they are citizens who are hawking their houses. You know, they are having to get they're pulling on their savings. Many of them are seniors. It's not easy. You know, they're not in the early part of their earning window. They're doing home equity lines of credit. They've had to do a lot to work
and
against
so,
this.
And did you talk
the
on the radio
on.
Today
uh-huh.
about how the dairy that's owned by Pierre Omidyar and Ulupono are supposed to do a new EIS in the ruling, if I'm not mistaken. But from what I understand, people at Friends of Mahalapu, and I could be wrong, so Bridget Hammerquist, if you're listening and I'm wrong, please call in and correct me. But if I recall, they have not been pursuing that new EIS, and instead the focus of many arms of the Pierre Omidyar Empire seem to be focused on dismantling the very law that they broke so that developers in the future will have a much more watered down and weakened environmental law.
Yes, and you are
and
listening.
I'm talking
you are
about.
Let me say this, please, because I'm at the top of the hour. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Jake. I have Kuhan Peck on the phone with me, who is highly informed on these topics. And yes, what you're saying, I wasn't as crisp on that. This seems like an end run around what the Department of Health was saying, and I brought that up to her. I actually asked some pretty hard questions back at her, got scolded for doing it, but she had left out the piece that their environmental impact statement.
Felicia, we have Bridget on the line right now, so I'm
okay. You can put them both on. Okay.
Is it Bridget?
Yeah, Bridget. Yes. Can you turn your radio off, please, Bridget?
Sure.
All right, Bridget, I don't know if you're listening. If you want to make the correction on, like, she was asking me about the EIS. Amy did speak to the EIS after I asked a question, but please, you can say the piece on the EIS. Bridget was there as well.
Oh, no.
Were you there, Bridget? In case if you're cold on this, then I will just go ahead and finish.
No, I think what the point Kuhan was making is pretty accurate. Basically, we don't really know what they're doing, but we were concerned when we found that Ulupono was submitting comments to the Office of Environmental Quality Control suggesting that they be allowed to batch public comment and therefore limit their response. In other words, they should be able to put certain comments together that they feel are sufficiently similar and then pick what they call would be an exemplar comment and respond to it. And when we found that out, and in this isn't widely publicized stuff, but we pretty much have to be very watchful and find things like this. And fortunately, there are good people in the world who keep us posted, and we find things ourselves, too. But we did comment, and we actually flew down, myself and one other board member, to testify before the Environmental Council because this was such a big deal. And I think you're exactly right, Kuhan. Their approach now is we didn't make it. The public presented the science and the evidence, and it defeated our ability to execute our plan. Now what we need to do is make it easier for developers to execute plans. Now, somehow in this is lost the fact that there needs to be protection for the environment. And so if you're now going to change the environmental laws and you're going to change legislative laws, because they did propose a change that they wanted with the legislature, and you're going to host conferences that teach regulators and developers how the public's sentiments and strength of feeling about an area can be neutralized, or they can be divided, they can separate the room up, you can send them to corners. I mean, it's one thing, and this was pointed out actually by one of the deans from the law school, and she was wonderful on it. She said, you know, you do have to have credibility. You do have to get back to the public. And if you just take their ideas and say, I'll get back to you, but you have no intention of doing that, or you send them to corners, but you never share the information that came out in those corners, then you're not using that process ethically or for the legitimate reason. You're doing it to dilute them and diminish their contribution. So it was, I have to say, I listened to Carol and yourself in your comments, Felicia, and I was sitting there, a separate person, watching myself, and I was rather appalled at some of the things they were suggesting, because they weren't saying, let's hear what they say. Let's take it into consideration, because, God, yeah, we don't want to destroy their drinking water. We don't want to give up the last of our living coral reefs. And the reefs out at Mahalepu are exquisite. And
or even
Dr.
that
Music
we don't.
Tells us we have one of the biggest heads of coral out there that's a unique species, and she knows because she got her PhD in Pacific corals. So, you know, do we put that all at risk? And somehow that was not part of the conference. And so that was disappointing for me, but I'm glad I went. And, yeah, Amy did make a presentation, and she told the audience that by the end of the day when they were submitting their final, they were committed, and they had gone down to 699 cows. And Carol actually called one of the moderators on the fact that she never shared with that body of people, the 100 or so that were in that room, that those 699 cows have to be pregnant for them to be milkers, to produce milk. And that's a necessary part of their production of milk, is to be pregnant. So by definition, you don't have 699. You have 699 times two, and sometimes the moms carry twins. So there were quite a few facts like that that Amy kept out, and as you pointed out, Felicia, in your question to her, she didn't share the fact that there had been a federal and state lawsuit that they had lost, and lost soundly, and if they had been doing nothing wrong, working without permits, etc., which the lawsuits brought out, you know, I mean, this was billed as a polarized public that had stopped development. And as one of the facilitators said who came up to me after, it just sounds like it was a bad business idea. And it wasn't the public. But still, I really love the last panel, Felicia. Can I tell Kuhan about it?
There yes, because we haven't talked about
Hawaiian,
it.
Mm-hmm. Native Hawaiian contributors, and they were absolutely wonderful. They should have been the first panel of the conference. But there was this woman who's on the faculty at the University of Hawaii, and she pointed out, Malia Satagawa, I think her name is, she pointed out that the developer in the room had used the phrase of, if we contact the kapuna and the community and try to get a better understanding, and she said, you know, it shouldn't be if you contact them. They were the people who kept our resources in great order for hundreds of years and successfully fed over 1 million people. We were totally sustainable in the islands with food. There was no relying on planes or ships. We had everything we needed to eat here. We had a clean watershed, and that was all maintained under the Hawaiian Resource Management System. So you do need to talk to them before you do anything in an area. And I thought that was so, you know, poignant that you brought that up.
Yes, and if I could use that aspect to segue to something that's happening this Friday, that was last Friday that we were at the symposium, I think Saturday when Malia spoke. This Friday, the Board of Land and Natural Resources are going to be dealing with the revocable permit on the North Fork of the Wailua River, also more correctly known as the Wai'ali'ali Stream. That hasn't been your key focus, but you are also focusing on that, correct?
Yes, we just had a meeting today that lasted about 2.5 hours trying to get ready for it. It's a huge issue, and it's really huge. I mean, once you get into it, Felicia, basically all the waters of Wai'ali'ali that flow into the Puna, what would be the Puna District, that's all the way from Wailua over to Puhi and beyond, are being diverted by 100% stream diversions. There's five major streams, and Wai'ali'ali, which you're right, becomes the North Fork of the Wailua River, gets to flow for 1.5 miles, and then it's 100% diverted on the base flow. And the base flow means it takes the flow that the stream is bringing out of the mountain on days where there's no rain.
It is.
So there's a flow on non-rainy days, and that's what comes from the mountain's groundwater resources, what basically soaks in and then the mountain gives out and creates a stream. It's like a leaky bucket.
And
Adam Asquith explained, and I think that was a good illustration. But we're going down on Friday because the permit only mentions two of the streams, but there's five being 100% diverted.
Right. Waikoko, Ili'ili'ula, Iole, Waiaka, and the Wai'ahi streams.
Wai'ahi,
Yeah, and so it's like a giant rain gutter running. It's Kuhan's line.
Did we lose?
Yeah. Oops.
Sorry.
So it's like a giant rain gutter along the mountain there, grabbing those five streams, and then basically drying up a segment down below that would stay in Wailua, as opposed to bringing that water over to the reservoir in Kapaia and then dumping that water in Hanamaulu. And when we have this freshwater recharge challenge, you know, in a number of our moku, in a number of our areas, this is an example of where...
Yeah, the water's not being allowed to run in its natural flow, and nobody's really monitoring it. And at the time where sugar needed water for irrigation, it took the flow out into the pastures and the fields where the corn cane was growing, and it spread the water all over the surface, thousands and thousands of acres. So the ground recharge was happening. Now that it's all being diverted to ditches, and the ditches then run a long way carrying the water to surface water treatment plants or depositing it in reservoirs, and the Kapaia Reservoir and the Waitā Reservoir are examples of huge reservoirs. There are others. It's depriving the surface. And as someone said today in the meeting, there's many acres, hundreds and hundreds of acres of ag land on Kauai. But if a farmer goes in to get a lease from the state on ag land, they're told, well, only problem is there's no water for your land.
Well, that's particularly on the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. There are others, but that is particularly... This.
Well, even on the state ag lands, that's happening, Felicia. And so what they're doing is they're driving the small farmers to Grow Farm, and then Grow Farm sells them, as a term of the lease, the water that it's diverting that wasn't theirs to begin with. And they're also selling it to the county. And, you know, one of the interesting things that Hope Kauai came up upon, which I think is really great, in the revocable permit that's going to be on the agenda and going to be discussed Friday on whether or not to renew it, is the requirement that Grow Farm can charge for maintaining the ditch, maintaining the plumbing that carries the water, but they can't charge for the water. But they are. They're charging the county $2 million some dollars a year for delivering 3 million gallons of potable water.
And this
is
mostly through that Waiahi surface water treatment plant, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
And then I am seeing, you know, there's this stable storm ditch.
Yes.
Right? The stable storm ditch, which right now isn't currently being utilized. But if these hydro plants that Kauai Island Utility Cooperative is looking to get the permit for, ultimately, tomorrow or this week it's the revocable permit, but next year they'll be looking for a 65-year lease to be able to run these two hydro plants in the upper...
Well, more than that, they're basically gaining a leased right to all the water they're now taking under a month-to-month tenancy.
That's correct.
Yeah, and they actually put their lease application in back in 2001, 2004, actually. And so the lease application has been there, but here's the thing. It's kind of like what happened to us with the dairy. They put in an application for the permit they needed to have, and they put it in like five times over the course of 2 years. But they never quite turned in all the information, and they never quite got the permit. Well, the same thing is happening with KIUC. They are saying they're going to apply for lease, but under the Hawaii Revised Statutes, because of the fact that their operation involves conservation land, rainforest, protected water, the use of federal funds. There's a critical habitat up there, an endangered species that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of studies that they're supposed to do, a watershed management study, an EIS. They're supposed to apply for a conservation district use permit. And none of that has happened. So for 16 years, they've been on a month-to-month revocable permit. In that time, they not only haven't paid for the 100% diversion, because they claim they put 95% of it back, that they only expend 5% of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they pay a rate where they're only paying for 5% of the water. They don't put the water back into the streams of origin. They put them back into the South Fork, but only for a short distance before Grow Farm diverts it all.
Right. So this is the piece that I really wanted to get, make sure is clear, because I have other guests in the studio here that are
okay,
waiting for their time. When I look at this stable storm ditch, if this was really just for Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, it looks like the stable storm ditch could help it to become a non-consumptive piece. So since I'm a member of KIUC and I'm looking, how do I have a righteous power company, I could say, well, we could use the stable storm ditch, and then the water would be going back into the North Fork of the Wailua River, or perhaps along that whole piece where they're the rain gutter, they could be letting more of this water be filtering down. There's several different ways they could actually solve this problem. And when I look at these details, it seems to me that they don't want to solve the problem, because there's really must be another deal where Grow Farm continues to be able to manage the potential of the water from Wailua as a resource for Lihue. So there is a way to not be in violation and to achieve the goals of KIUC, but yet it is really benefiting Grow Farm. And where I get sore about that, just like with Mauna Kea, when there's a lawsuit or there's a court case, the taxpayers pay for it because it's going through UH. If and when there's a lawsuit here, the ratepayers will pay for it because it's going through KIUC, whereas Grow Farm is really the ultimate beneficiary of that diversion. Do I have that correct? And you are a skilled lawyer.
Well, I think that they both are beneficiaries of the diversion because they are running power off of it and selling the power to the public. Albeit it's only 1 to 1.5% of the island's daily power, they are still a beneficiary. I think a greater beneficiary is Grove Farm. And there's, you know, we know about the restoration to the South Fork, but there's two, there's the Upper Lahui Ditch and Lower Lahui Ditch, and the Upper Lahui Ditch is not even really a ditch. The hydro plant, actually, the water exits into plumbing, into pipes that take it up north of the Hanamalu Reservoir at Kapa'ia, basically. The Hanamalu Stream was dammed and made the Hanamalu Reservoir.
Okay.
So it runs north of that on its way over to Lahui. And the Lower Lahui Ditch is another access that gets direct water from the hydro. But the most important thing is, even if they used the ditch that you're referring to, the law says it's consumptive unless the water's returned to the stream of origin. So
yes,
you have to look at the five streams that they're 100% diverting and check the geography. But I don't think they can get the water back to the stream of origin without significant cost.
Okay, so Bridget Hammerquist, thank you for helping us with this. This meeting is on Friday. People could write a letter whether they support or
right.
Don't support it.
Right, if they would go to the DLNR website.
Department of Land and Natural Resources website for Hawaii.
Yeah, they can comment, and all the comments that can be filed would be very helpful.
Can you have somebody post that location on my Facebook page? So that
yes,
people can know to go there. And then just kind of short in closing on that. Oh, my goodness, now I forgot what I was going to say.
This is just on the one-year renewal.
This is just on the one-year renewal.
But we're trying to bring the issues to the front so that KIUC receives some critical admonitions from the Board of Land and Natural Resources because they've taken 16 years and they've not done any of the things they know they have to do.
This is an important piece, too. While I appreciate these 200-year-old hydro plants and we want to maintain them, this is a very nominal amount of power that is produced for the island. It's less than 5%, correct? It's like something like 3% of the power?
Yeah, it's like 1 to 1.5% max that it can produce.
And I know it's not always up. So, like, when one thing that we learned in this symposium that we went to, I looked and I saw that KIUC put out myth and facts of the KIUC discussion on the Waialiali Stream. And those myths and facts, they're putting more myths in some of the places of the facts. And so I, you know, there's some truth. When I read that, it felt like the manipulated truth of what we were learning about in our symposium. And I actually appreciate our power cooperative, but we are doing our part as members to keep it Pono. And when we are moving the water out of these rivers and out of their natural habitat, people could go to the historical society and look at what the pictures of Kekaha, Waimea looked like. Certainly Poipu, Wailua, all over, it was abundant with water and vegetation. And because we have had more than a century of diverting the waters, we are exhausting our ground table, and we are seeing more and more contaminated water sources.
Our stream mouths have much higher bacteria because there's not the flushing that's happening.
And the wells. I'm seeing it. People
The wells aren't recharging.
They
actually put the wells to rest, right? You heard the water department say that, Felicia.
Yes.
That they put the wells to rest. They thought that would allow them to be recharged, and they started using the ditch water for drinking water so that all of the 15,000 homes that are serviced in Lahui and Hanama'ulu are drinking ditch water.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still the wells aren't recharging. That's the problem.
So thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate this.
Oh, thanks for what you do, Felicia.
Yeah, we'll need to do another discussion on this, and then we're going to shift our focus now to people in the room.
Aloha and mahalo.
Aloha. Thank you. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So I have some patient guests in the studio here. Linda and Jerry Driscoll, how are you? Make your mouths right up next to the microphones.
We're fine.
Okay, great.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so you called me with something that I heard for the first time yesterday, I believe, is when I really discussed it with you. Can you tell the listeners really quick the essence of the issue, and this is going before the Liquor Commission on Thursday.
At
what time?
4 o'clock. And only people who can speak there are people within 500 feet of the problem, the distillery. Yeah.
So you live within 500 feet of the distillery, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us what all is the development on the property and then what they're planning to do? You know, what is the hoped-for goal by the landowner? And, you know, give us the rundown on why you're not stoked about it.
Well, you can build any process on your land if you actually grow the product on your land. The issue is that this is not a case where they are growing the material on the land and they're asking for a distillery which uses rice, wheat, corn, and those items do not thrive on this side of the island.
So what's the end product of the distillery?
They're going to make bourbon, and
okay, bourbon, that's alcohol.
Yes, and you know, there is affluence from it, and there are problems with it, and I can't see the advantage to any of the people who live within 500 feet of this. But what they're asking for is a industrial commercial zoning exception there, and that would increase the traffic, the pollution from it, and so we as are directly involved with it. The law, which is Hawaiian Statute 281-39.5, states that if there is 40% of the people within 500 feet of the corners of the property, then the Liquor Commission is required to deny their license. Now, one of the things that is a beef to us is that we were never informed of this law, that the governance sort of winked at it, and the person applying for it, of course, he naturally, or his company naturally, would not want to bring that to the attention of the people in the neighborhood. There were a few letters, perhaps a dozen, we don't have an exact account, informing us that he was applying for a liquor license, and it's designated for that property.
So this is on Kauai Hau Road. And then you're giving me an example of the neighborhood. Is this where, sort of just off Kauai Hau Road, it looks like maybe a 2-acre piece, this is where the distillery is?
The distillery is in the black.
Okay, the black. Okay, I see that. So.
And the red are the people who are against the installation of distillery.
And the blue are the people who support it?
They're undecided.
Undecided.
And the gold or orange are the people who are for it.
So I see two out of how many neighbors? Maybe it looks like probably 25 or 30?
73.
73. Two out of 73. Boy, I didn't estimate very well. Two out of 73 are supportive of this. So I want to say, and you're a college professor, if I remember correctly, chemistry
yes,
professor.
Retired chemistry professor from the University of Utah.
Okay, so unsurprising then that you know how to format a discussion and how to get that out there, because like our larger story on this show is the public process and how we have to make sure that we keep the public process empowered. So when I look at this, when they're wanting to do a distillery on the land, I'm all about value-added products, Kauai products. I thought this was a tobacco field right there.
That is correct.
So are they still going to be growing the tobacco there?
No, yeah. But they're going to be processing it there as well.
So they're going to have several different distilleries?
They're going to have five different processes.
Okay, so what are they?
Of course, there's the liquor, if they get the commission to vote for it. Then there's the tobacco, and the tobacco is one that produces a lot of ammonia, and that can be very dangerous depending on the percentage. At 3%, you get headaches and trouble breathing and dizziness. And if you go up to 15%, it can cause death. It can cause unconsciousness and death. And the way that ammonia is it, the winds, the trades will blow it toward the mountain. And when it hits that mountain, it's going to stop. It's going to be cold and it's going to fall to the ground. And in low spots, it can get much more concentrated. And it's a danger to both people and animals who might stray in there unbeknownst.
So it looks like it is nestled in, are these ag parcels on the south side of Kauai Hau Road and residential parcels on the north side of Kauai Hau Road?
Correct.
Yeah, correct.
So you have probably, I believe, I know this area, school buses? There's schools down below, but...
There's schools at 2 miles. There's two public schools, an elementary and a high school, and then there's a nursery school.
Okay, and there are bus stops. I, for the most part, I really support being able to help agriculture projects. It looks like this isn't a very big piece of land. You said there's five different, 2 acres?
2.4 acres.
2.4 acres, but they're going to be doing five different products. That was alcohol, tobacco,
chocolate, bees,
honey.
Yeah, honey. And
chocolate. You got
coffee. Okay, so I'm wondering, down in Kapa'a, I know there's an industrial district down there that seems to have a number of empty buildings. It seems like what I always like to look at is if there's solutions. Like what we were just hearing with the KIUC piece, it looks like there is, now I'm not staring at it, but there is another ditch, that maybe that ditch water can move it so we can still get our power, we can make that work. While we support all these value-added products, it seems like rather than getting a variance here, they could put it in the industrial area that's underutilized. I mean, that's a solution.
We agree with that 100%.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanale, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. In the studio with me are Jerry and Linda Driscoll. Small farmers, small family farmers, like you're probably more subsistence farms. You sell your products or?
We get them away. We bring them to the food bank and to homeless shelters.
Okay. So you are food contributors to the community. I have been on your property and really you've got a lot. You know, you got a lot on there. It's pretty impressive.
About 400 trees.
Yeah. So you got everything from worms to chickens. You got it all there, you know. So it's actually, I want to applaud you. I'm not calling you older, but you are retired, and the amount of activity on your property is significant. And I appreciate that you share that out. So it's not like these people don't have another place where they could put it. What concerns me sometimes when there is a variation, you know, a variance, is that it starts to set a precedent.
Exactly, and that's one thing we're concerned about, is because it'll be a precedent started for a spot industrialization throughout the neighborhood. Well, they can do it at 5907. Why can't we do it here? And then that will bring more pollution, more affluent products into the neighborhood. And they say that there will be no stench. But one of the people that signed the petition said they went to Jack Daniel's distillery, and they found that they could smell it 3 miles away.
Okay, well, that's important. And then what I'm curious on, I don't know if you've looked into this at all, if, you know, I don't drink, so I have to just expose my bias, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I did, I would be more excited about it. But does an alcohol distillery draw people who maybe might want it? I mean, you know, is there an increased crime rate around it? Or
if he gets a use permit, he will be able to serve liquor there or sell it by the package, by the bottle, or else perhaps be able to sell it by the drink. It looks more like he would have a sampling room where he would be giving people samples of
his bourbon. So this is a little bit more of a visitor area then. So they would come in. Like, I'm all behind what we call it, agrotourism. I know he has a house up higher up the road. I mean, maybe he could put it next to his house instead of your house.
That's what we think. Why shouldn't he? It's his dream. Why should we have to suffer the consequence of his dream? When one person is able...
His dream? Is that what you're saying?
His employees say it's his lifelong dream.
Okay,
that's great. We all have dreams. But the problem is he has one of the processes there now, and that's his coffee, and the neighbors don't like the smoke. So he went and bought a $40,000 machine to cut the smoke down, but there's still smoke. And so he's wanting to get rid of that so his neighbors don't have a more litigious attitude.
Do we have a caller who wants to join our conversation? Okay, so somebody has something they want to say. So, aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. Hey, talking about this distillery that's proposed.
Yes.
I am a distiller.
Okay, tell us.
There is nothing bad that is produced from distilling grains.
No ammonia?
There's no ammonia. There's nothing bad. If people believe that stills can blow up, that's a fallacy. That is true to a point, but they don't blow up the way people think they are.
Do you have a home-style distillery, or do you have a commercial distillery?
I have a home-style distillery, yes. And it's all organic. It sounds to me like the people who are applying to do this are doing the right thing.
So you think it's
a local produced product. They may be producing a whiskey from grains that are brought in from other places. But to me, that's fantastic.
So what about putting that, I'm just, you know, trying to play the facilitator here, either doing it next to their own house since they're on a larger piece of land, if they're wanting to make a variation or special use permit for an agriculture piece, maybe they put it on the larger piece of land next to their own home, or maybe placing it in a commercial industrial zone as opposed to next to...
Why would it need to be in a commercial industrial zone?
Because their column still was made to run 24/7 for increased revenue.
Correct.
Pardon?
He said correct.
Yes, correct. You're correct. Correct. Continue, please.
And it's noisy. It's got what they call a tumbler in it. When the liquor comes down the pipe in the second distillery, it hits back and forth against the pipe in a rhythmic motion because it's not a full stream. And it's quite loud. And those of us, we live 20 feet from that property, across the driveway. That's it. And it's quite loud. And then on top of that, the fermenting process with the grain, et cetera, at 72 hours cooking does produce, in many cases, a problem with stink. I've heard it called many kinds of stink, and I don't want to go into that. But
let me ask you this. Do you drink kombucha?
No, I don't.
Do you know what kombucha is?
Yes.
Okay. You may have a semi-valid point, excuse me, in my opinion. The mash process of creating alcohol does create an odor to it. But I can say pretty unequivocally that that odor is very minimal, and that odor also does not have anything toxic in it.
So,
it's the decomposition of grains, fruits, sugars,
yeast
into alcohol.
So, caller, thank you for calling this in, and I'm going to have to sort of move along, but I appreciate the balance that you're offering and knowing as a home distiller that if this was right next to your house, you would be okay with it and the tobacco
production. Absolutely. 100%.
Five production plants next to your house, you would
be
down.
100%. If I understood what you guys were talking about, it's the field up there that used to grow tobacco.
Still does.
Absolutely. I have no problem with it whatsoever.
Do you live in the area?
Excuse me?
And do you live in that area? I'm just trying to...
I do not live in that area, no.
Okay.
But knowing that area and how they're bigger areas, bigger gentleman farms, whatever you want to call them, should not be an issue whatsoever.
On the south side of the street.
You know, I believe this person is doing it because they have that land, they have that property, and they want to do this with that property. They don't want to go have to find a commercial property that's going to cost them a huge amount of money to do it.
You mean to rent a commercial property? How about...
Correct.
I mean, because the rent of a commercial property would probably be less expensive than building a new one. What do you think if they built it on their own property, where they live?
Well, I think they should.
I mean, like, if they built it where they lived... I mean, I'm just, you know, because they have two pieces of property off Kauai Hau Road, so they are choosing to put it next to Jerry and Linda's house instead of next to their own. So that's just kind of a curious thing, you know?
Well, I'm sorry that I don't know where Jerry and Linda's property is,
comparatively speaking
to that. Jerry and Linda,
who are in here, they live right next to this property. So,
and when you say right next to it, what is that? Is that a half acre? Is that an acre? Is it five acres?
We're both 2 acre properties.
Are you actually
2.4 acres, same as the property with the distillery.
Should
but
be,
they are downwind.
No,
they
well,
are downwind.
Okay, wait a minute. How big of a still are they proposing to do?
Well, they're saying they're going to start little, just 2 hours a day, 2 days a week for 2 months a year. That's
how big of a still?
Well, they haven't said.
They're not transparent.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they haven't said, but they're saying they'll start
small. In my
opinion,
that's irrellevant. You know,
okay, so thank you, caller.
Well, we get the message you're for it.
No problem with it.
Okay, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your thing.
Thank you, and continue the discussion. I'll be listening.
Okay, aloha. So,
the discussion will be over on this Thursday. So
that's what I was going to ask you. It's going before the Liquor Commission. So when you show me that neighborhood picture, if you have signatures or letters or something that actually validates how deeply opposed the surrounding area is to it, I would think that you wouldn't have much of an issue before and asking for the special use permit. You know, that would probably be a no there. And then so like for the caller who called in general, I support value-added products. Mm. I very much support being able to put the business right on the farm. But it sounds like this is going to be like a commercial concentration site, mm-hmm. and probably less of being right on the farm. And I would be more sympathetic with the distiller, because I know where their house is, if they put it on their own house site, which is like the last caller called it Gentleman Estates. Well, the distiller person, it's a gentleman estate, so put it on his own gentleman estate. You know, I mean, that's just a thought I have. I'm sure he's going to be pretty angry with me for saying that. But if he was putting it in his own place, I would be like, yeah, you know, maybe it's not that bad. Because he's got a beautiful house.
Yeah.
When he's putting it next to your house, I think, yeah, you know, maybe I don't get that as much.
Well, and moving it all there. I mean, one thing is one thing, but five things?
Five things. So, it, yeah.
And then the liquor, if the Liquor Commission grants this, after all of the neighbors have displayed their dissatisfaction with it, then 66 disenfranchised victims, because that's what they'll be if all of this is coming through their air into their home, against their legal protest and in support of the very Kauai County laws the applicant is challenging in court. And so our beliefs in the fair justice system are at stake here. You know, you put your energy into this, into your hopes and your dreams, and then someone comes along and defiles it. It's like they came in and stole everything you own.
Well, okay, I mean, that I can get that that's very disappointing. I probably, if they really did come in and steal everything you own, that might feel a little bit different. But I know when they were going to put a cell tower across the street from my house, if they had succeeded on it, and I fought that aggressively, if they had succeeded on it, I would have had to sell my house. I would not live there.
Exactly.
So in that way, it would have been a removal of my peace of mind. So I appreciate that. I am expecting a call coming in on the Princeville Resort development, so I'm trolling for that person to call in. Jazz with John is coming up next. I also want to share a special event that we're going to be hearing in just a moment. But Jerry and Linda Driscoll, I appreciate your use of Kauai Community Radio as community citizens, because this is 100% on our mission statement. And it's also 100% on our mission statement to have that caller call in and say, hey, I have a differing opinion, and I have some experience, and I wouldn't be worried. So I heard him say, hey, he'd be fine with it. I know that you are in a certain special position because you are right adjacent to it. So this is KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Jake. And let's hear what the Department of Health has up.
Rat lungworm disease is a risk statewide, but we can all help right in our own neighborhoods by keeping our yards free of slugs and snails, using traps to catch rats and disposing of them properly, and always rinsing fresh fruits and vegetables thoroughly and carefully before eating or cooking. Let's work together to prevent rat lungworm disease. Find more information and tips at health.hawaii.gov, sponsored by the Hawaii State Department of Health.
I'm really glad that they put that out. That's the first time I've heard that one, and it's appropriate they put it on this show, because we have done a number of shows on it, and it's not a reason to panic, but it is a reason to be very careful. We do know that it is present in our slugs and snails here, and at one point, you know, it seemed like we were being told it's not even an issue here, and there have been cases here, though the stronger cases are on Maui and Hawaii. A few other things I want to bring up. I think this Princeville Resort designation, I was expecting a call, but it's a very hot topic. People should Google search that. It is probably coming up before the Planning Commission either. Usually that's on Tuesday. I believe that would be next Tuesday. I will try and look for that in a moment.
Now, is that the Hanalei Ridgeline? Is that what that's referring to?
No. It is over there near the Prince Course.
Okay, towards the airport.
More towards the airport, and, you know, what happens when they... put this on, maybe this is because of the county council report. I'm looking at Jazz with John, who does our county council report. We'll listen to that in a moment and listen carefully for it. They want to be have resort designation for that whole plateau above Anini as resort designation. And we have seen that we have the potential for a 43% increase in hotel rooms already for what is not entitled. There are 43% more entitled hotel rooms. And many people are really reverberating from the more than a third of the population typically that's on the streets that are on vacation. We want to love up our visitors. We don't want them to feel resented or crowded or not treated right. So the people who are the most strongly opposed to this Princeville, or most vocal, happens to be the young crowd born here, Hawaiian, very passionate, powerful speaking at the planning commission meetings. This is something that is likely to be put into the general plan update. And so it is
and if I'm not mistaken,
intensely felt.
If I'm not mistaken, it was approved years and years back and then never developed?
Yeah, like at one point. What happened is not long after statehood in the late 60s and early 70s, a lot of places were set out as this could be valuable for this, for resort. And I don't think they had the forethought to really think about how that would work in the long run. And so those lands have been, you know, sold and sold and sold again, you know, more and more money spent on it to keep, you know, they're worth a lot more value if you could do it. They're also taxed at a higher rate. So there's a whole big game that goes on with that. Another thing that will come up on the county council tomorrow is approving a raise for the county employees. And I don't have an opinion on that, but last week there was a 5-to-1 approval. Mel Raposo, I will own it. I'm in agreement with Mel Raposo on this one, for increasing the general excise tax for the county. Mel's reason, which resonates with me, is that this transit accommodation tax was designed to help with the very expenses that the GET tax is now being trying to be leveraged to help our roads and bathrooms and different things like that. And because the state has been able to basically hold on to the transit accommodation tax, which was not the original intention, and then they put like $2 billion at the rail project after they've already spent $5 billion, there's a lot of challenges. So we will hear more about what's coming up in the county council with John just before, as he does the county council report. I want to also, and I don't know if you saw the new film about Dustin Barca. I watched it. It's pretty good. Spoiler alert, I'm a little piece in it. That's why I was able to pre-see it. But it's going to debut tonight in Holly Eva on December 5th, tonight, there. And I thought they did a good job. They did a good job. It's not making anybody wrong. It's looking at how one person follows their passion in the arc of how a person's life goes. But it is definitely looking at politics and policy as it happens in Hawaii and how it impacts people. And I think it's a well-done film. Change for Balance put it out. It's like a half-hour film.
Being that I grew up around Dustin and was a good family friend of his for a long time, I've seen the change and the things that he's, not only for the younger generation, but for myself. I've actually started paying attention to more politics and some of the other things that otherwise I wouldn't have thought twice about. And it's getting a younger group of people involved in these kinds of things and in the political process and figuring out what's going on in the community. So I definitely think it's a positive thing, and I know it's been a positive thing for him. I know it's not easy, but I got to commend him. I give him credit to run for mayor in the position he was in, and
Yeah, he did. He got 37%. That's pretty darn good.
He did an awesome job. Definitely.
Yeah, and it looks at that arc of growing up in kind of an environment of conflict in the surf community and some of what we experience in school here and, you know, shifting into sports, including being an MMA fighter, then taking on a political issue. And then, you know, now in this point, walking the talk in being a farmer and actually
shifting it to a positive light.
Shifting, you know, the creation of the awareness, but then actually trying to walk in what he is saying needs to be the case. So congratulations, Dustin, for this film that came out. It's 5 years in the making. So Jazz with John is up at the top of the hour. Jerry and Linda, I want you to be able to, let's not go deep into the detail, but just again telling the listeners where the next place is and the key reasons why you're opposed. If it somehow passes the Liquor Commission, and I actually think it might not, you know, like if the distillery doesn't, but the chocolate or the honey or the coffee, do you feel the same way about those particular products? I know that there is, you know, probably traffic or crowding on the roads, but is it dominantly the distillery or the tobacco, or is it anything?
Basically all of it, because it's a zoning law issue, and we just want to keep a quiet community, but we're talking about a zoning law issue here. And how it affects the community.
But we're also talking about the products that's coming off of this. If he moves all that there, we will have to move because my health will not sustain the strain on my lungs.
Okay.
Well, 100 pounds of dry corn will produce 30 pounds of carbon dioxide, which is not poisonous as such, but with that, there's the effluent of the cement of the fermentation process. So I'm not so sure that what they're asking us to experience something we haven't experienced. So we'd rather not experience it.
Okay, and it sounds like, I mean, if what I'm seeing on that diagram of 73 neighbors...
Yeah, six of the ones we contacted... 77% were against it. We weren't able to contact everybody, but with those included, it'd be 66% against.
Okay, so
the law requires 40%, so we're way over that.
40% to be against?
Yeah, and then the liquor, according to this law, they can't grant the license.
All right, 4 o'clock on Thursday. If they follow the law, it sounds like you have a pretty open and shut case. And I was looking for, is there any space in negotiation? Do you feel bad about the honey? I mean, like, if they had honey, chocolate, coffee, how do you feel on those ones?
Well, the processing is the problem. I'm not against honey, chocolate, or, you know, tobacco. I don't smoke, but that's okay, you know, and the world doesn't have to follow me. And, but... it's just the processing of it causes, like Jerry says, affluents that are unhealthy. And
right. Honey, like, I'm not sure it does, though.
Well, and probably not honey.
Yeah, I don't think honey does. I don't know enough on the details, but thank you guys for being empowered and motivated and doing your homework and, you know, coming to talk to KKCR because... that's why we're here, and Kauai Soapbox, that is the key point. And so we are all about empowering the underserved voice, and the miscellaneous person in their house is the underserved voice. And I will say to the person who is putting in all those facilities, certainly they can call me 652-4363 or go to FeliciaCowden.com or whatever. And if they would like equal representation and they want to talk about it, they are willing, I mean, they are welcome to do so. So, thank you. So I will look, and at the coffee company, I see I got their phone number, was just handed to me. So in good faith, you're showing me how I could get a hold of those people. Typically, they would call me. I could maybe call them. Aloha. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda and Jerry. Thank you, John, for coming on. And here is the county council report. I see the phone's ringing, but you're too late. Thank you.